You know, I was thinking that there's probably nothing more gross and gory than a Truman Capote novel until I found out that here comes the Colonel.
I know. The show's pretty horrible in lots of ways. I didn't know we were quite as bad as a Truman Capote novel, though. Well, welcome back to In Cold Blood. Now, the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. And in just a minute, I'm going to introduce you to Christoph Ramstein. He's going to tell us about the electrical conducting polymers in our future. Some pretty exciting stuff. And then, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, though, I want to point out to you there's some really exciting thing going on November 8th. That's a Thursday in San Antonio, if you can be down there or anywhere near. Great conference with information on natural gas and electric transportation options, saying that it's great for driving profits to your bottom line. I'm sure fleet operators and things will really find it interesting, but you will too. Julia Jones is going to be there with CPS Energy. Chip Hawes with Chesapeake Energy is there. And Tom Reinhardt, the Southwest Research Institute. He's the engineer in engine design and development. It's going to be at the Hilton San Antonio. And again, that's November 8th, a Thursday. And you can find out more information at the North San Antonio Chamber website. That would be northsachamber.com. Right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set and see if we can get an answer to today's query. What do you say?
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Ah, yes, we've thrown in the coins, and so we have aroused the spirit of the fountain once again. All right. Oh, spirit of the fountain, a little geography question for you today. What country contains South America's highest and South America's lowest points in the same country? What country contains South America's highest and lowest points?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
I can't fool the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right. The South American country that has the highest and lowest points in the same country, the Argentines have that one, yeah. If you said Argentina, you are absolutely correct. All right, let's get back to our guest. Christoph Ramstein is the president and CEO of a company called Strategic Polymers. Now, Strategic Polymers is the world's source for electromechanical polymer actuators. And if you don't know what that is, well, you're about to. So anyway, Christoph, welcome to the program.
Hi, Turner Mason. Happy to be here.
All right, we've been talking about touch technology for a long time. In fact, as you've been working in that, I understand, for a couple of decades, you're the founder of Haptic Technologies, the leading-edge award-winning haptic company that was acquired by Immersion in 2000. And, of course, you're educated in Grenoble, France. And but we've seen the touch technology, you know, come about. But now you're talking about these are the thinnest actuators, and you say you're quoted as saying the application goes beyond the imagination. Help us with that a little bit. How does this go beyond the imagination?
When you think about the computers today, there's nothing but a piece of glass that you use to interact with the device, and again bringing this notion of experiencing a keyboard in a way that gets you literally the shape of the keys of a keyboard while you interact with it, as opposed to simple vibrations or sound or graphics. But now beyond that, of course, haptics has also to do with surgical applications in the medical space, how you interact with a surgical device and bring to the surgeons much more of the reality of what is happening on the surgical site. For driving a car, that is something that Immersion has been doing for many years. Driving a car, eyes on the road, hands on the wheels, and you control the console with your hands and feel the menus without looking at them. And of course, in the gaming space, where you are playing a game and you get this feedback that gets you just more into the game. It's not about Star Trek. It's really about how you get the experience more tangible and more in line with what you do in reality. That is why it's going beyond imagination. It's simply because it brings touch feedback back to the computer experience.
Now, these electromechanical polymer actuators react to touch, but is it heat or is it pressure or a combination of both, and how does that work?
Colonel, that's a really good question. So electromechanical polymers are a very unique polymer. Let's call it a plastic, and that can be extremely thin. It can be a little bit thicker than the shrink wrap plastic you put on top of the food cans, so very thin, 50 microns, that's what we're talking about. And it's an actuator that when you apply voltage to it, it's going to deform. And when it deforms under the proper digital control, it's going to create vibrations that you can feel with your fingers. But more than that, it's also going to create sounds. So you can play music, and that can be used as a speaker. But eventually, the most exciting feature of this electromechanical polymer actuator is its ability to deform. So now suddenly you have a material that you can combine with a sensor. And when you combine this with a sensor, now you will have a shape as opposed to have vibrations, graphics, and sounds. But the same material can be used for the three types of things. It vibrates, it plays sounds, and it deforms.
So, unlike the old micro switches that we've seen get better and better and better over the years, instead what you have is a film that reacts when it is deformed, when it is pressurized and actually changes shape rather than a mechanical reaction to some sort of pressure. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, this is a magical and disruptive nature of this material, and actually, in addition to what you just said, in addition to physically bending, it has a piezo effect. That means that if you deform mechanically the film, it's going to create some voltage that computers will be able to use as an input. So it is a material that acts as an actuator, so it deforms, it vibrates, but conversely, when you deform it, it's also going to be used as an input to any type of electronic system that can read this input.
Well, I've got a million other questions that are posed with this. Of course, very thin material. First question comes to mind is the durability. And since it is flexing, then, of course, it only has so many flexes, and the time comes when it wears out and wears thin. And what about the fail-safe methods with all these? I mean, how do you keep something from brushing against it or doing something that's unintended? And where is, you know, where's the room to prevent accidents and that sort of thing?
That's another really important question. So keep in mind that we're still early stage in the development and the productization of this material. However, the preliminary testing we have done so far is very promising and showing that the material is resisting really well to bending and vibrations. And I'm talking about millions of cycles that we went through, telling me that, you know, from a durability standpoint, this material is actually very good. Now, of course, when you think about integrating this and touching it or scratching it, there's lots of issues we will have to deal with, and making sure that the coating we will be putting on top of the film itself will be resistant to certain level of scratch, as any type of touch sensors, touch screens, and touch pads do today. Again, very early stage, but very promising, and all the signs are indicating that this is a material and a proper integration will meet most of the OEMs, mobile OEMs, a bill.
Well, I know you've replaced my friend Ralph Russo as president and CEO. He's now chairman of the board. Of course, he was co-founder of the company, and I've known Ralph now for a number of years, and he keeps telling me about all the really exciting things that are going to be happening. And so, Strategic Polymers, what is the next move, and when is this going to be launched? And then tell us what kind of effect this is going to have on the products that we're going to be seeing in the future.
Well, I think, Colonel, I mean, this technology is so disruptive that it's going to transform the user experience, literally. We're going to go from devices that exist today in a fairly rigid form to devices that will deform in real time. It's almost like going to be creating second skin on top of devices, where we go from rigid physical devices into organic shapes that users will be able to use almost as a secondary organ. So where we are today is there are a couple of things that we need to accomplish to go to mass market, and one of them is bring this actuator to mass production, which is something that we're aiming at happening in the first part of next year, with the first product shipping hopefully by the end of next year, end of 2013, early 2014, in a fairly simple form factor that I won't disclose here, but it is going to be a first instantiation of this material in a smartphone, tablets, or other type of consumer electronic devices. And then from there, we're going to go into what is really the exciting part about this technology, and that is going to be integrating the material to make deformable keyboards for any type of touchscreens. And that's going to happen in different stages that are defined and being discussed with the market leaders today.
So you're looking at a worldwide revolution in touchscreens and in using these polymers to control different devices, and you say that it's going to be very disruptive, and it's going to change entirely the way we're using our current our current tools. Give us an example. Take a current tool that today we're using with a touch screen, and which that they're pretty common, and how will this change the tool? Give us an example.
Let me give you a very, very simple example, Colonel Mason. When I use my touch screen today to type text, I have a keyboard that is displayed on the screen. Once our technology is integrated with the touch screen, when you will be typing text, you will be feeding the keys as you do when you play with a physical keyboard. So you would say, well, but that's not a big deal. But the reality is, it is a big deal. With touchscreens, there's so much frustration when you type on a key. You never know if you hit the right key. You never do. And there are so many software tools that exist to compensate for this weakness that this is going to be a major change. But far beyond that, imagine you're driving a car. And your car has a dashboard, and on top of the dashboard you have today mechanical switches. Mm-hmm. Imagine now that you are transforming this dashboard, and instead of the mechanical switches, you have capacitive sensors. And when you turn the engine on, you have these little switches raising out of the surface with some backlighting and other types of things that come out of it. But then when you move your hands over the dashboard, your eyes on the road, another part of your body is, of course, steering the car. But then you control the computer and you feel the keys, you feel the switches, and you don't have to look at it. Of course, touch is something that we barely notice on a day-to-day basis. But when you're in a car, when you're using a smartphone, when you're playing games, all of that is literally adding to the realism and the intensity of the interaction you have with the computers. And that is how this technology, EMP technology, strategic polymers technology, is going to transform the way we are interacting with the computer. And maybe people won't even notice it because it's going to be so realistic. And that's good. That's good because that's what physics is about. It is about things we have learned over time that we're using even without noticing it. What strategic polymer is now doing is bringing this back to the computer and the way we interact with those devices.
So this will be like second nature, like our bodies are naturally interacting with these machines and we're not even realizing it, the way we might reach for a glass of water or the way we might just scratch our nose. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the day you create a device that deforms and the deformation is very consistent with what you're used to do in reality, we won't notice it. But we will like it because that's what is good for our body. That's what our brain is expecting. That's what we do on a day-to-day basis but can't do with the computers today. And that's why this technology is so important, is because we're bringing the technology closer to what your human being is expecting from technology and reality. And that is also why this material is so important. And that is also why there's nothing else that can actually do what I'm describing, because no other material can do what EMP can do today. And that is why it's going to be so successful and powerful at bringing the user experience to the next level.
The other question, of course, always comes with anything scientific that is outside of the realm of human manipulation, and that is when you get into electromechanical things such as this, and you're driving a car, it can be very dangerous if you instruct the car to do the wrong thing. How is fail-safe built into this? Does it just not work if it doesn't work, or does it just start giving different commands in different directions?
So, well, I think in terms of the future of the user interfaces, there is clearly the concept of multimodality, where you're combining multiple different feedback to the same functionality. So, of course, when we talk about feedback and actually interaction with a computer, there's always this notion of you combine sound with graphics or visual feedback and haptics. And, of course, the qualification of the technologies that are being used in transportation devices or vehicles is going to be a question of how we produce it. So combining multimodality with fairly well-tested and productized devices should be addressing this problem. And all the certifications process and definitions are getting more and more refined to make sure that we minimize the safety risk. So as far as I'm concerned, this is going to be handled by the production stages and making sure that the failing mode is under control.
All right, we're going to be looking forward to seeing products with these sorts of responses and actuators built in, maybe towards the end of 2013, you say, or maybe even sooner. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, what I'm saying is we have work to do, and that's why I'm so excited to be on board being with Strategic Polymers. We have an amazing technology. We need to bring this technology to mass production, which will happen between now and early 2013, and then we are going to be releasing a first product hopefully by the end of 2013, early 2014, a first design win being a smartphone or a tablet that will have our technology embedded in it and that everybody will be able to use. At first, it's not going to be deformation. Deformation is going to come later. But there are so many other things that we can do with this technology that I'm not worried about that.
So you're working with partners right now to come out with the smartphones and smart tablets and then other things beyond that, maybe even things that can help the disabled and people that are paralyzed and that sort of thing as far as being able to function on a daily basis. I can see that too. Is that right?
Yeah, this is what is so exciting about this technology. Now, my experience in life, I come from developing technology for people with special needs. Again, I mentioned visually impaired people. I spent almost 3 years developing technology for this community, understanding them really well. At the end of the day, if you don't work the mainstreams, it's going to be really hard to get the really cool technology down to products that are good for them. So what we're doing now is really focusing on the mass market, because there's a need, there are problems to resolve, and we have a solution for that. And we're going to be bringing this technology with partners, currently in discussion with the lead OEMs in the mobile space. Most of them are really excited. But once you have this technology in the mainstream, of course the cost is going to be lower, and then we can really see value in places where we can literally either use the devices and technology as they are for people with some needs, visually impaired, blind people, people driving a car in a certain degree, people doing things where they can't really look at what they are doing. It's going to be very helpful for them. And then, of course, applications of this technology that at that point of time is much cheaper can be used for specific products that are going to be used for people with needs.
All right, Christoph, you've kind of given us a really interesting picture of the near future. Why don't you put on the meditation cap for just a minute and think for just a second and take us far out, maybe 10, 15, 20 years or so. What do you see in the long run in the future?
In the long run, Colonel, is really the exciting part, because we're just at the beginning of what I'm calling transformative physical user experience. When you go from a very thick, and even if people think that the iPad is very thin, I think this is still very, very thick. Think about a a sheet of paper. Think about plastic, how thin this could be. The future of interaction with our computers is going to be almost transparent, having very thin pieces and sheets of devices. Walls in your offices that will be responsive to you. Places where when you hold your device in your hand, it transforms according to what you're doing. You know, I'm talking to my spouse, and when I want to express, or companions, and I want to express some emotions, I would have this device deforming in my hand as a heartbeat. I would be feeling that. As a surgeon, I would be operating on my patient, and I would have a sense of what's going on inside the body, as if I could be literally manipulating the body, and gives me more comfort and reduces the risk of accidents and impairments. Driving a car, I mean, all this technology is going to be morphing in the car. Today, things are still very static. We're really going into something where the material, the structure, the physics is going to go from being rigid, you know, stiff, you can't move it, it's not deforming, into something that is reacting to you almost as an organ.
Wow, fascinating stuff, Christoph.
Now check our website, www.strategicpolymers.com. There is a video showing what the material can do. We're going to be announcing lots of stuff while we keep growing. This company is at the point where we're looking for some investment, and we are in fairly good shape from that standpoint, so expect Strategic Polymers to become a leading company in the space of actuators for haptic applications, for acoustic applications, for medical applications, and many others, considering this material as a real disruptive technology.
All right. Thank you very much for the great interview, Christoph.
Very good, Colonel Mason. Thank you very much.
All right, Christoph. Thank you very much, too. Bye-bye. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I'd like to say a few words about patents. When you're an inventor, it's an important thing to know about. You know, your ideas are good, but patents protect you from other people just using your ideas. If you don't use a patent attorney, you risk making a fatal error when writing the patent application. If you do use an attorney, you have to spend a lot of money. I chose to spend the money and sleep better at night. Now, the U.S. Patent Office has put online all patents since 1976, but not before that. If you want to learn about a field, reading patents is a great way to learn. It's important to see even very old patents on an invention, because old patents expired after 17 years, newer ones 20 years. So if you can find an old patent on the thing that you're doing, then it's free to use, and then you can add to it, and then that becomes a patent. This is hard to believe. Google has scanned all 8 million U.S. patents that have ever been issued, and some of these patents are many pages long. And the Google patent site is free. This is Steve Shope. I'm a retired electrical engineer. I'm in Wakefield, Massachusetts, north of Boston, and I've been inventing things.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.